a lingering hiss. Time seemed to slow as the demon surveyed the realm it had been birthed into. Its mouth worked soundlessly, chewing the air. Then, half-formed and losing cohesion with every passing moment, it lunged faster and faster than it should have been able to. Its wormy blade made an awful keening sound as it passed through Belloc's shoulder and chest. As the demon ripped its weapon free, the ganger collapsed. Pale maggots sprouted from the blackening wound, gnawing at his rapidly liquefying flesh. Belloc's body twitched and jumped as the maggots devoured him and grew fat. Belloc's men scattered, some fleeing, others shooting at the creature, but to no avail. As the creature closed in on those too stubborn to retreat, Rucken bellowed wordlessly, trying to catch its attention. He ducked aside as the demon whirled towards him. It chortled something in glottal tones, but he ignored it. His tulwar danced across its tattered hide, rending it like soggy paper. Steaming ichor splattered his white armor and stung his bare arms. He backed away, pulling his bolt pistol. The demon lurched after him, losing pieces of itself with every step.
The worm crawls in. The worm crawls out. The worm squirms all about.
It grunted in a wet, ugly voice as it pursued him.
The worm goes up. The worm goes down. The worm... Quiet!
Rucken snarled and shot it in the head. Its cyclopean eye burst like a boil, spattering the ground with pus. Its skull deflated with a feculent wheeze, and the body unravelled, tumbling to the ground in bits and pieces. The cloud of flies shuddered and dissipated, leaving Rucken's head and vision clear. The plaza was full of bodies, and the stink of death was strong in the air. He looked at one of the surviving gangers.
Prometheum, burn everything, just like the last time.
He looked up as a shadow flickered across the plaza. Gunships, no way to tell whose.
They're ours.
Rucken spun, tulwar extended. Solaro raised an eyebrow as the blade came to rest against the edge of his neck. The Reaver stepped back, respectfully. He looked past Rucken.
Trouble?
No, you...
The Reaver laughed. Rucken smiled thinly. He liked the Raven Guard, despite his abnormal height. They worked well together since the siege had begun. Solaro had his own contingent of mortals to shepherd, and Rucken saw them picking their way through the carnage.
We heard the shooting.
Cultists, Rucken said and spat. More of them since yesterday, though.
He sheathed his blade. Every day brought more of them, in landing craft or crawling over the mountains. And that was just Lowtown.
Yes.
Solaro indicated the upper reaches of the city.
All heading that way. Siege weapons too. Tanks and artillery.
Rucken turned.
Best to contact the lieutenant then.
Think he'll want us to go?
Rucken spat again.
Doesn't matter. That's where I'm going.
Almace, Primus Asteroid Facilities. Karos leaned over the flickering schematic, frowning.
They're pulling back to the ore processors.
He traced the image with a finger, causing it to hum softly. As it flickered, it cast sharp shadows on the dingy walls of the chamber. Originally, it had been an ore vein, but as the shaft had been stripped bare, the miners had reinforced it and made it an extension of the facility, turning it into a catch-all chamber, a storage area or a place for the swing shift to sleep. Thousands of similar sites dotted the asteroid's insides. At the moment, it was Karras's headquarters. Enforcers and miners moved about, stacking supplies or studying maps, planning future operations. Women and children huddled in the corners, cooking or loading weapons. An elderly missionary, Zebus, that was his name, read haltingly from the Lectitio Divinitatis to an attentive crowd. Ravenguard moved about the chamber, overseeing the preparations. Sometimes they stopped to advise or comment, but mostly they watched. That was as it should be, Karras thought. Space Marines were powerful, worth 100 lesser souls, but they were finite. With the proper training, the miners could continue to resist the enemy after the last Raven Guard had perished. That they would all perish was an unspoken certainty among them. The enemy outnumbered them, despite the heavy losses the traitors had taken in the initial ambush. There would be no reinforcements from Almais. The Raven Guard would fight and die, one by one. But the miners might live, might survive. That was enough. Karras glanced at Darren.
Any word from Spyros?
The other Raven Guard shook his head.
I can't even pitch into his picter feed. His armor's offline.
Karras's frown deepened. There was only one conclusion to draw from that.
He's lost to us,
Darren said. It wasn't a question. Karras shook his head. Spyros wasn't the first of their number to fall, but something felt off about it.
Maybe not. They're planning something. The assaults here and here, they were more like raids, wouldn't you say?
He looked over at Reyes and Desh. The enforcer had his helmet off as well, and his features were haggard and bloody. Reyes handed him a cup of steaming recaf, and he thanked her with a brusque nod. Desh nodded as he sipped his drink.
Oh, I don't have much experience with it, but yes, smash and grab rather than trying to take ground.
He looked at Reyes.
How many did they take?
She looked away.
We don't know. They hit one of the secure hab areas. At least, we thought it was secure.
She concentrated on her recaf. Desh hesitated and then reached out, as if to comfort her. She twitched away from him, and he let his hand fall. Karras watched this interplay with mild interest before turning his attention back to the problem at hand.
Why take prisoners?
He said out loud. He looked at Darren.
If you were one of them, why burden yourself with captives? Hostages. No, they know we will not bargain.
Reyes stiffened at that, but said nothing. Karras met her gaze and she looked away.
A ritual, he said.
Darren grunted. Like Karras, he knew how the Wordbearers fought.
Makes sense. They're running short of chaff, and the traitors probably aren't eager to waste their own lives. Not when they can.
He trailed off. Something that might have been a shudder ran through him. Space Marines knew no fear. That was the assumed wisdom, at any rate. But they could be unsettled, made uneasy by things outside of their comprehension. Demons were such a thing. They were elements of wrongness imposed on reality. Karras had fought them more than once, even before the Indomitus Crusade. Some chapters mind-wiped those battle brothers, unfortunate enough to encounter such creatures. But the Raven Guard were wiser than most. Experience with such opponents was worth more than any potential harm such knowledge brought. Two, with the opening of the Great Rift, such knowledge had become sadly undeniable. The damned had set foot on Holy Terra, and nothing would ever be the same.
If they are preparing for such a thing, we must stop it. Like as not, we are already out of time, but even so, we must try.
He expanded the schematic.
There are four main routes to the ore processors.
Six,
Reyes corrected. Karras looked at her, and she pointed to the schematic.
Processing chutes. Ore goes in, gets melted down, and fed into the refineries on the next level. It's a clear climb, if you've got the strength for it. They're still firing, though. No way to get through them without cutting the power.
Unless you're wearing power armor,
Darren murmured. Karras nodded after a quick calculation.
We'd have to be quick. Even our battle plate isn't going to withstand those temperatures for long. Doable, though, with luck.
I didn't realize Space Marines believed in luck,
Desh said. His eyes widened as he realized that he'd spoken out loud. Hastily, he looked down at his cup. Karras smiled.
Luck is as keen a blade as this one on my hip.
He indicated his combat knife for emphasis.
But you must be careful, lest it turns in your hand.
He looked at Darren.
Coming up through those chutes, we'll be right in the middle of them, and with no time to analyze the situation beforehand. Bad for an assault,
Darren said.
Good for a distraction, though.
Karras looked at Reyes and Desh. The humans glanced at one another, and then at him. Kara smiled.
Don't worry. I have a plan.
Almace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Explosions rocked the Relicuri Boulevard. A building groaned and slumped on its foundations as its broken walls spilled across the side street, erasing it from sight.
That's the last of them, Canonus Law said. The fire corridor is finished.
Good,
Calder replied. They stood upon the steps leading up to the distant shape of the Cardinal's Gate, overseeing the final defensive preparations. The steps were wide, slab things that rose steeply upwards for several leagues. Landings jutted from them at points, connected to causeways that led elsewhere in the city. At the very top of the steps was the gate itself, a towering edifice of bronze and iron, hung with bells and censers. Bulwarks had been erected on the landing before it, providing a final redoubt. Despite the best efforts of Torag and the city's defences, the enemy had managed to land assault cutters and dropships throughout Armacia. Thousands of troops had spilled into the streets, mostly in Lowtown, but there were determined pockets elsewhere, and more arriving with every hour. The ships in orbit were emptying their guts over the planet. He knew the scene would be the same in the other cities, though most of the enemy's efforts were concentrated here. That was fine by Calder. Below him, Battle Sisters and Imperial Fists alike made ready for the arrival of the enemy. More squads of both were scattered throughout the upper reaches of the city, concentrated around the processional way. That thoroughfare was the main artery of the city, connecting the depths of Lowtown to the spires of High, and the most likely route of the enemy advance. It had seen the passage of millions of pilgrims over the centuries since Almacia's founding. Great statues of saints and ecumenical personages overlooked the wide boulevard, from column plinths strung with great webs of electrical lightning, and a canopy of hanging censers that filled the air with the sweet stink of incense. The censers swayed in the breeze, and ribbons of smoke drifted down from above, briefly interfering with Calder's auto-sensors before they automatically compensated. Statues had been toppled at designated locations, creating a makeshift choke point. The relic keeper, responsible for taking care of them, had gone into frenzied convulsions, even as the first had been forced from its plinth, wailing imprecations upon the heads of the desecrators. Luckily, Canonus Law had been on hand to see to the matter. Calder glanced up. The body of the relic keeper hung from the canopy among the censers, twisting gently in the breeze. As he watched, one of the dead man's sandals slipped from a limp foot and fell to the street. Calder followed its trajectory idly. He felt only the dullest glimmer of pity for the man, but even so, he wondered if there had not been a better way. Something of that must have showed in his body language, for Law cleared her throat.
"You seem displeased," she said.
Calder looked down at her, somewhat startled by her perceptiveness.
"The most efficient solution is not always the most optimal," he said after a moment.
Law smiled, her scarred features making the expression almost a grimace.
"He was given a command by the Cardinal Governor. He failed to obey. The punishment for such heresy is death."
"You sound almost gleeful, Canonus."
Her smile widened, becoming almost grotesque.
"I am ecstatic, Lieutenant. At last, my faith is rewarded. Aemon has been kind, too kind, to those who defy him. Now, the time for kindness is done. The weak and sinful will be purged by this tribulation. This is a baptism of fire, from which a new Almace will rise, stronger and blessed in the eyes of him who guides us."
She made a fist.
"Our faith will light the dark, and we shall cast our defiance into the teeth of the God Emperor's foes."
Calder said nothing. He wondered what she would make of all that he had seen and heard in those ancient days, before he had been consigned to the vaults to await Gilliman's summons. Two, what would be her reaction to Aemon's prisoner? Would her faith shatter at the sight of the anchorite, or would it only redouble itself? Then, part of him suspected that she already knew. He could not say which thought unsettled him more. A vox operator signalled them.
It's Swordmaster Tyr, my lord, the man said nervously.
He was a member of one of several squads assigned to the Cardinal's Gate in support of Law's Battle Sisters and Calder's intercessors.
Channel 26 Alpha.
Calder cycled through the Vox signals until he found the correct frequency.
Tyr, this is Calder. Status? It's as you predicted, Lieutenant. Lowdown is indefensible. I'm ordering a general withdrawal. You might want to let the White Scars know.
No need. Rucken has his orders. He'll bleed them from below as we hammer them from here. Pull back to the Cardinal's Gate and disperse your formations across Hightown. We'll join you in 5 standard hours.
You seem confident.
No confidence. Experience. They'll lose most of their momentum in Lowtown. Discipline will begin to break down. They'll be looking to enjoy themselves, or for reinforcements.
He paused, wondering how best to explain, but Tyr saved him the trouble.
Reinforcements,
Tyr said, and laughed harshly.
That's one word for it. Speak plain, Lieutenant. They'll be looking to unleash the legions of hell on us.
Yes, but Rucken will do what he can to prevent that. As will we.
He paused again.
If we can't, we will need to alter our strategy.
I will make the Cardinal Governor aware of the situation.
Calder cut the link and looked at Law.
You heard?
She grinned.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to it.
She closed her eyes and leaned her head back, as if scenting the air.
The chance to fight the arch-enemy again is truly a gift from the God Emperor.
Calder's vox clicked.
Solaro,
he said.
Status?
Busy,
came the reply.
So I assumed. Report.
Siege weapons moving along the northern causeway towards the Pilgrim's Gate.
Calder frowned, as he'd predicted. The enemy would seek to breach the gate and bring the weapons through Hightown in order to train them on the Cathedral Palace.
Focus your efforts on disabling those weapons. I don't want them getting in range of the palace.
Might be too late already.
Then do what you can.
Trouble?
Laura asked. Calder looked down at her.
Only the expected variety.
Laura smiled.
They are predictable in my experience. Puppets to fell powers, unable to...
She was interrupted by a shout from the end of the street. A battle sister hurried towards the steps.
Aisha,
Laura said, descending to meet the other woman.
Something to report, sister? The enemy, canoness! They come!
Laura laughed, low and savage. She looked at Calder, her gaze wild, and he nodded. She laughed again and quickly descended the rest of the way to the street. Calder followed more slowly. With the fire corridor in place, the street was a killing field. The enemy would charge and die. He'd made sure to leave them no other choice. He could hear them now, even without his auto-sensors. The clanging of great bells and the piping of flutes, shouts and hymns and the rattle of undisciplined gunfire. Kenric, one of his intercessors, was waiting for him at the bottom of the steps.
Estimates put enemy numbers at several hundred,
Kenric said, as he fell into step with Calder.
Maybe 3. No organization to speak of. Just humans. So far.
Calder nodded.
The traitors won't show themselves until they're sure of support. This is just a distraction.
Shouts now from the other end of the street. Soldiers fell back, taking up position behind the outermost bulwarks. Law was already there, exhorting her followers in ringing tones. Calder signalled his intercessors with a single vox click. They would hold the centre. It was imperative that the defenders see them doing so. Morale was as much a weapon as a bolt rifle. His display flickered and magnified the opposite end of the street. He could see them coming. Thin, feral faces, some masked, others bare, twisted bodies wrapped in rags or plundered armour, carrying weapons as poorly treated as their wielders. They carried standards made from scrap metal and rotting body parts, or great bells that clanged hollowly. Calder had made a study of the battlefield markings of the enemy, at least those it was safe to look at. He recognised the primitive heraldry of at least 3 distinct groups, all of them far from home. Some of them he'd fought before, as the Indomitus Crusade stretched across the stars.
"Place your shots! Standards and leaders first," he said. "Kill anyone shouting orders. Leave the slaughter to Law and the others."
He did not bother to check that they had heard him. They would follow orders. The bulwark was tall enough to shelter the Primaris Marines, but just barely. Calder set his shoulder against the ferrocrete and peered over the top. The enemy were flooding into the street, howling and chanting.
"Animals," Kenric said softly.
Calder glanced at him.
"No, that is what makes this all the worse."
He turned, checking the rest of the line. Men and women in Ecclesiarchy Red clutched their weapons with nervous intensity. Some were afraid, others eager. But he was satisfied that they would hold. Law prowled behind them, her voice raised in exultation.
"Raise your voices to the heavens, so that the God Emperor might hear you," she cried, lifting her crackling power maul. "Sing, sisters! Sing, penitents! Sing!"
She wheeled her flat gaze, sweeping across the ranks of soldiers and sororitas.
"Sing the song of our last days! Sing so that we are not forgotten! Meet their demon hymns with our own holy song! Sing!"
And they sang. Calder watched in silence as the troopers first raised their voices in song and then their lasguns, setting them across the barricades. The sororitas followed suit, their voices more practiced. Battle hymns were as much a part of their arsenal as the bolter. He raised his own weapon.
"On my mark,"
he said through the vox.
"Shall we sing as well, Lieutenant?"
Kenric asked. Calder looked at him.
"Sing if you wish, Kenric, so long as you can shoot at the same time."
Targeting runes flickered to life as the first of the foe reached maximum optimal range. Calder felt a flicker of pity for the debased figures racing towards him through the dust. Misplaced faith had led them to their deaths, as surely as if they'd put guns to their own heads. But they'd made their choice, and now would suffer the consequences. The voices of the faithful met in the dusty air, and for a moment, Calder imagined the songs twisting in battle above his head. Then the first lasbolts erupted from the bulwarks, and several cultists fell, their howls cut short. But more pressed forward, trampling the bodies of the fallen in their eagerness to reach their foes. Behind him, Kenric began to sing. One by one, the other intercessors joined him, and the deep, basso rumbling of their voices stretched out. Troopers shot nervous glances their way, and their singing faltered, but Law nodded in evident pleasure.
"See!" she shouted. "See! The angels of the Emperor add their voices to yours! You are blessed, you sons and daughters of Almes! Show them your thanks! Sing!"
Once more, the song rose, bolstered by the throbbing pulse of Primaris voices. The enemy raced towards the barricades, and Calder's targeting runes flashed green.
"Fire!"
he said. Bolt rifles thundered, and the foe died. Chapter 23. 95, 10, 20. Almes, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Duceppe watched in satisfaction as the trio of heavily armoured Deimos Pattern Vindicators rumbled up the throughway. Their demolisher cannons thundered one after the other, shattering the foundations of the causeways and clearing the streets of rubble. In their wake, mortal chaff marched in rigid formation under the watchful eyes of Legion overseers. Duceppe always favoured martial rigour over theological. Off the battlefield, faith was between a man and his gods. On the battlefield, Duceppe was the only deity his slaves needed to worry about. The word-bearer stood atop the observation cupola of a heavy Medusa field gun. Behind him, his slaves rang their tocsins and called out the eightfold prayers of far slaughter. The ancient weapon had seen him through 1,000 sieges. Its red flanks were marked by kill runes, and he trained its crew himself. The Medusa growled as its treads crunched over broken bulwarks, and he patted the top of its blast shield affectionately. Red drifts of bodies were flattened beneath the Medusa's weight as the advance growled forward. There were larger corpses mixed in among the mortal meat, Imperial fists, but only a few, a bare handful, and not enough to stop him. He studied the bodies as his brothers plundered them, taking sections of battle plate or even gene seed. The latter was worth a lord's ransom in the eye. It was also a delicacy among certain fraternal lodges. As he watched, two word-bearers shucked their helms and shared a meal of raw gene seed, gobbling it down with no thought to the mortals who might be observing them. Duceppe sighed at their lack of civility and made note, intending to chastise them later. Discipline had to be maintained, especially in front of the slaves.
"My lord, the pilgrim's gate is just up ahead,"
one of his assistants quavered. Duceppe looked down at the mortal and cuffed him, knocking him sprawling.
"I am aware. Do not speak again unless it is to tell me something I do not know."
Duceppe looked up as an assault cutter, one of several, scythed overhead. The bulky vessels were archaic, even by his standards. Little more than aerodynamic drop pods, and armed to the teeth. They were hurtling towards the prearranged drop points, their bellies full of mortal meat. Slave soldiers and cultists. Their blood would sanctify the battlefields above, calling the children of the gods to war. He frowned at the thought. Demons always complicated what should be a relatively simple matter. He heard shouts from behind the Medusa, and saw that the troops following in his wake had stopped. He could hear them arguing with each other from here. While the cults made for excellent battlefield chaff, they had exaggerated notions of their own importance. Get enough of them together in one place, and they started vying to be top of the midden heap. Even slaves had a hierarchy, however ridiculous the notion. Duceppe looked down at his cowering aide.
"On your feet, maggot. We have a rendezvous to reach. Get them moving."
He reached for the lash hanging from his belt as the mortal scrambled to his feet and leapt down from the Medusa.
"You shouldn't beat them so,"
a nearby word-bearer said.
"They are fragile, and there are better uses for their pain."
"Hello, Morkesh. Come to contribute to the war effort."
Duceppe looked down at the other word-bearer. Morkesh was a Diabolus by inclination. He wore a ritual harness studded with spirit bottles and prayer scrolls, and there were sensors built into the cooling vents of his armor's power pack. Sweet-smelling smoke cloaked him at all times, and it seemed to take the shape of leering faces whenever the wind blew just right.
"Maybe conjure up some living siege weapons for us, eh?"
"Mockery, brother."
Duceppe laughed. Morkesh sounded annoyed. That was good. Duceppe wasn't overly fond of Morkesh, or Diabolists in general. Neverborn might be blessed of the gods, but they were a curse on the battlefield. You couldn't give them orders, no matter what fools like Morkesh claimed. They were like a natural disaster. You just had to hope that they went in the right direction.
"No. No, of course not. I wouldn't dare. Why are you here?"
"I go where I am needed."
"I don't recall asking for your help, brother."
"I don't recall offering it, brother."
Morkesh looked around.
"Ah, the winds of chaos blow strong here. Demons press close all about us, clawing at the barriers between worlds. They smell the blood of the fallen."
"Is that what that stink is?"
Duceppe made a show of looking around.
Well... "Where are they, then? I can't see them, and I have very keen eyes."
Morkesh ignored him and crouched, tracing his fingers through the effluvia on the ground. Duceppe shook his head and turned away, slightly repulsed. Despite his jibes, he could feel the Neverborn as easily as Morkesh, if not perceive them. The air felt oily when they were about. It felt wrong, as if the universe had grown ill. Duseb did not consider himself especially devout. He knew the names of the gods and made the ceremonial ablutions on the holy days. He painted his battle plate the correct shades, when necessary. But the gods were remote things. They prowled battlefields far beyond those ruled by Duseb and his brothers. Like many in the Legion, he did just enough to avoid drawing the ire of the gods or their representatives, but no more than that.
"They're coming,"
Morkesh said.
"I thought they were already here."
Morkesh looked at him.
"They are both here and not. The universe has been made permeable, and things may be in two places at once."
"Yes, things have changed, haven't they?"
Duseb sighed.
"Things were simpler in the old days, before all this confusion. Gods and demons, when it was just a man and his faith and the desert."
He turned and studied the distant spires of the cathedral palace. He began to calculate how best to crack it. Morkesh laughed.
"Yes, it is a grand time to be alive."
There was a sound on the air, as of chains rattling, or hooves stamping. The oily sensation had grown worse. The mortals had fallen silent, and even the other word-bearers paused watchfully.
"God's grant that it stays that way," Duseb muttered.
Almace, Primus Asteroid Facilities. Hasht warmed his gloved hands over a plasma vent as the Blessed Ones went about their holy work. He kept his distance, as was only prudent. Too close, and the gods might decide to add his soul to their bounty. It was cold in the chamber, despite the heat issuing from the vents. The miners had damaged the environmental controls on this level. The Blessed Ones hadn't noticed, wouldn't notice, until Hasht and the others started freezing to death. He pulled the collar of his uniform tight, trying to ward off the chill. Around him, the remainder of his brotherhood stood watching the proceedings with the appropriate levels of awe and appreciation. He studied their faces, noting those who were missing. Their membership had never been as large as some, and it had shrunk drastically in the past few days, from several hundred to barely 60. Men and women he had sworn blood oaths with were gone, their bodies crushed and lost, or frozen stiff on the asteroid surface. Worse, most of them had died without seeing the faces of their enemy. Those who were left, he barely knew, or didn't want to. He raised his hands, flexing them, feeling the ache of the cold. It wasn't much different, this. Serving the Blessed Ones or serving in an Astra Militarum regiment, you still wound up cold and far from home. You still wound up on a stone, with a knife at your heart. If the gods wanted you, they'd have you one way or another. Better to serve them willingly than be served up to them. That's what the Blessed One said. He watched them, careful not to look directly at them. They didn't like that. Some of them would tolerate it, but most would kill a man the way Hasht would kill a fly. Then, the Emperor's angels weren't much different. He looked away as they killed another group of miners and dumped their blood into the troughs. Bodies were stacked like ingots in the corner of the chamber. Some of those in his brotherhood were already eyeing them hungrily. Protein was protein, and it had been a day or two since any of them had anything more than a ration bar. Hasht wasn't that hungry, quite yet, but he knew he soon would be. He wondered whether he'd be able to stomach it this time. He reached for his canteen, but found it empty. They hadn't yet managed to get to the hydrogen cyclers for the facility. He turned to one of the others, a hard-faced woman named Skeeda, and gestured.
"Water,"
he said.
"No water,"
she said, handing him a battered flask. He took a swig and nearly choked on it. Whatever it was burned like hot embers going down his throat. Gasping, he handed it back. She grinned.
"Bartered it from the half-breeds on the gunnery decks. They brew it in the siphon tanks. Good, eh?"
"No,"
he said, pouring at his mouth. It felt as if his lips were peeling.
"Keeps you alert, though, and keeps you from getting hungry."
She took a swallow and rolled it around in her mouth. He watched the crude ritual tattoos on her face flex and squirm. Similar patterns adorned his own flesh. He tapped his cheek.
Akil do yours too?
Akil had been their brotherhood's right keeper. He was dead now. Something had twisted his head off in one of the southern junctions. Skeeter nodded.
Just before we left Pergamon. She touched her cheek. The Blessed Ones watched. Akil said it made the ink flow smooth.
Hash nodded. That sounded like Akil.
Never seen them this close, he said quietly. Never realised how big they are, how badly they smell, he said.
Skeeter snorted and clapped a hand over her mouth. Hash smiled. She shook her head.
They'd kill you if they heard you.
He shrugged.
They heard me. They don't care. And they smell like rancid meat and spoiled blood. Like a battlefield. Or a charnel house, she said. Akil used to say that some of them rub fat and incense on their armour to keep it shiny.
She took another swig.
Feel that. They're calling up the hunters from deep places.
Hasht shivered. The ritual had been going on for days, and would for several more, if the others were to be believed.
Never seen one up close. You?
She nodded, her face tight.
Once?
She stuffed her flask back into her armour.
Didn't like it. Don't like it.
She looked at him, and he saw fear in her eyes. And something else.
Come,
she said softly. She held out her hand. After a moment's hesitation, he took it. She led him away from the others, back towards the processor chutes. The heavy, chimney-like structures blared a welcome heat, and the clangour of their function drowned out the sounds of the ritual. The servitors were still at their stations, hard at work. They didn't stop, even when Skeeter kissed him. Her lips were rough against his, and he could taste the alcohol on her breath. There was fear there, and loneliness too. They were afraid all the time. Sometimes Hasht wondered if there'd ever been a time he hadn't been afraid. These little moments were all any of them had. A few minutes to forget the fear and the worry. To think about something other than attracting the ire of the Blessed Ones and the Dark Gods. Just a few precious moments of peace. Skeeter pushed back from him, panting slightly. He made to speak, but the words turned to dust on his lips as he saw it. Something black and terrible, rising over the lip of the chute above, its form steaming, its eyes red as blood, glaring down at him, glaring right through him. And he thought, just for a moment, of shouting, of crying out a warning. But the moment passed, and then it was too late to say anything at all. Almace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. The interior of the gunship shook as it dropped through the atmosphere. Warning lumens bathed everything in a warm red light as pressure valves clicked rhythmically. Imatnim ducked through the bulkhead, separating the pilot's compartment from the rest of the ship.
You wanted to see me, brother?
Yes, my lord.
The pilot was hooked snugly into his control throne, conduits and cables connected to numerous feed ports on his armour. Over the centuries, those ports had begun to take on a disturbingly organic texture, and they seemed to pulse and twitch in time to the pilot's movements. The rest of the crew were servitors, or had been. Now they were part of the gunship, semi-sentient synaptic nodules, their restraint cradles grown into hard, scabby tumours that hid all but their slack features. The pilot had no name, save that which he shared with his vessel, Golan. For all intents and purposes, man and machine were one and the same. When the pilot spoke, so too did the guiding machine spirit of the gunship. Imatnim was sure only that both were loyal to the Legion, and to him in particular.
"One moment, please," he said.
The reinforced viewscreen showed the upper atmosphere. Flickering ident runes spun across the screen, marking the locations of the other gunships and troop landers dropping towards the city. Explosions tore at the already ravaged air, ground flak rising from the upper reaches of the city. Apis winced as the edges of an explosion washed across Golan.
That was close, the pilot spoke up. No, it wasn't.
Another explosion followed. The glare of it momentarily filled the viewscreen. The gunship shuddered and veered. Apis stumbled and a Amatnim steadied him.
That one was,
the pilot added with an unpleasant chuckle. The city spun beneath them, spreading to fill the viewscreen. Slabs and stretches of white and grey spilled among the brown of the crater mountains. The explosions came faster and larger the lower they went. Flak towers hammered at the city as tracer fire spun and spiralled. A troop carrier was pierced clean through. A lucky shot. The great vessel listed, spewing smoke and gouts of flame. The pilot murmured a command, and the servitors replied in hissing, static-laced voices. The gunship banked away from the burning vessel. Amatnim leaned forward, watching the troop carrier plummet towards the city, like a newborn comet.
How many were aboard that one, do you think? He said. A few hundred,
Apis said.
Only immortals, though. No loss there, then.
Amatnim turned. He recognized some of the ident runes on the screen, the atmospheric cutters employed by the pirates in their raids. Ganor was making good on his part in the strategy. Some of the cutters disintegrated in mid-descent, cut to ribbons by the flak, but others streaked downwards, thrusters firing. The pilot grunted a curse as tracers skidded past Golan's prow. He thumbed an activation rune on his display, and the gunship's assault cannons roared. Targeting runes spun across the display as he returned fire, attempting to silence the closest flak tower. A burst of flame and smoke from below spoke to his skill in such matters.
There! Ought to buy us a few moments.
He glanced at Amatnim.
We will be entering the city's airspace within the hour, my lord, he said. Unfortunately, we are suffering a distinct lack of safe landing zones within reach of the designated target area.
He gestured without turning from his viewscreen. A hololithic schematic flickered into view above his throne. For a moment, it resembled a nest of squirming snakes. Then it resolved itself into a plan of the city. Augur sweeps and information provided by Ganor and the other pirates had given the word-bearers a wealth of valuable information. Amatnim had identified at least half a dozen sites, which they might set down just from a cursory glance. These were all illuminated on the schematic.
There are three options, the pilot said. None of them good. What about these?
Amatnim gestured to several of the other illuminated areas on the schematic.
Long-range augurs detected concealed weapons points, and thermal readings that can only be explosive charges. We land at any of those, we won't be in one piece for long.
Amatnim grunted.
Smart. Give us three doors that all lead to the same choke point, and all the while they'll be stalling Duceb.
He shook his head.
Imperial fists. Stubborn and infuriating to the last.
He gestured, and the schematic rotated.
The key to any victory is to force your opponent to react to your choices, rather than the opposite. So let's avoid those poison chalices they've so kindly left out, and choke them on their own hubris. Meaning?
Apis asked.
We're going to enact a rapid assault drop.
He looked at the pilot.
You know how to make a controlled crash, I trust.
The pilot looked up at him. He was silent for a moment before answering,
I know enough to know that I would rather not, my lord.
The gunship seemed to shudder in agreement around them.
Sometimes the gods ask that we take the hard road, brother. Contact the other gunships. I want you to plow right through whatever defences they've erected. Carry us right into the heart of them. Bold, especially since we might not survive, Apis said. And we won't be able to extract ourselves if we scrape these birds across the road. We have plenty of gunships, and as I've said before, brother, the gods love a gambler.
Amatnim leaned over the pilot's shoulder.
Take us in, brother, and sing them a hymn of fire as you do.
Chapter 24.
95-15-40. Almes, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Ord stood at rest, his heavy bolter hanging loosely from his hands. The metal of its barrel pinged softly as it cooled. He and his brothers were spread out among the mortal soldiers. Gert stood to the rear of the bulwark, ready to lend support where needed, while Kaln was crouched atop the gate itself, warding the fire team's position there. Ord had the honour of the centre, where his arc of fire would not be too badly hampered. Thus far, they had encountered little more than chaff, chanting lunatics clad in stolen fatigues, carrying weapons outdated even by the standards of a backwater world like this. They showed little discipline and little inclination to do anything more than rush to their deaths, singing foul hymns. Ord suspected that had he and his brothers not been there, it might have been enough. Numbers counted for more than most would admit. Gert made a sound, not quite a cough. Ord glanced at him, but said nothing.
"We have not heard from the lieutenant in several hours," Gert said after a moment.
There was a brief hesitation before the word lieutenant. Only a space marine would have noticed. Only an Imperial Fist would have known what it meant.
"So we hold," Ord said. "Those are our orders." "Places us to the back," Kaln murmured. "Takes his own kind forward."
"There are less than 50 of us to cover the gates of the upper city. He commands the defence of the main thoroughfare, as is his right as our commander."
Ord turned slightly, looking up at Kaln's yellow form, standing atop the gate.
"Or do you question his strategy?" "Not his strategy," Gert said.
Ord snorted.
"At least you have the sense to keep your murmurings to the vox."
It would not do for the mortals to hear such things.
"'Tis I am not a fool, brother."
"Only a fool claims not to be a fool," Ord said. "Save your mutterings for afterwards, brother. It will make entertaining listening at the victory feast."
"You're assuming we'll survive?"
"I always do."
"The odds are not in our favour."
"When are they ever?"
Ord glanced up at Gert.
"I have no intention of dying. Do you?
If so, please let me know, so that I may adjust our strategies accordingly." Gert's reply was lost in a haze of static. Ord was about to ask him to repeat himself when he heard something amidst the crackle.
"Blasted atmospheric disturbance!"
Gert's voice broke in suddenly.
"Quiet!"
Ord snarled.
"Listen."
He heard it again. Not across the vox this time, but out in the open, on the wind. A sharp, slithery sound, and then the clop of hooves, many of them racing through broken streets, faster and nearer with every moment. An unsettled murmur ran through the red-clad soldiers as the air took on a greasy tang. Ord heard a hiss. He looked down. The blood that coated the street was bubbling. Fat orbs swelled and burst, releasing a fragrant stench. Things like plump, red maggots writhed within them, twisting and stretching. A sound like claws scratching at stone echoed across the street as the clop of hooves grew louder and louder. A nearby voxcaster gave a squeal, and laughter emerged from it. A guttural flood of brutal obscenities followed, until a panicked soldier switched it off. Ord grunted.
"Something new." "Demons!" Gert said.
The word sent a chill through Ord. Not fear, not exactly, but uncertainty. As if he stood on a crumbling ledge, with no sign that it would take his weight. Demons. Some of his brothers thought them mere psychic phenomena, murderous phantoms conjured by witches. Others thought them something else entirely. Regardless, they knew neither fear nor fatigue. Even orcs would eventually flag and retreat, if you killed enough of them. But demons didn't. They just kept coming. There was only one way to effectively resist them, and that was to lay down enough fire to keep them at bay. His hands tightened on the grips of his heavy bolter.
"Yes, many of them."
Kaln grunted.
"I could smell them from here, like
sour blood and verdigris.
He paused.
Should we withdraw?
He asked the question hesitantly. Ord didn't reply. His auto-senses fuzzed and wept, unable to acclimate as the air twisted and steamed. The blood on the street was climbing the walls somehow, painting an improbable crimson corridor up to the edge of the Pilgrim's Gate. In the red steam of its boiling, he saw phantom shapes twist, as if in agony.
I knew something, like chains or blades or...
Gert began.
Ignore it, Ord said flatly. A witch's tricks. Have faith, brother.
Faith is the wall of the soul and the gate of the mind,
Caln recited.
Every shot a prayer, every blade a hymnal,
Gert added.
We are his fists, clad in mail, and our blows are his,
Ord said softly.
Ready yourselves, brothers. They want our gate. I do not think we will let them have it.
He raised his heavy bolter.
Not easily, at any rate.
Almace, Primus Asteroid Facilities. Reyes was frightened. Not the familiar sort of fear, the kind you got when you were hanging over a shaft, your harness slipping and the lumens too dim to show you the bottom. This was more visceral. The air tasted wrong, like poison. She wasn't the only one who was afraid. Desh was, too. The enforcer had practically sweated through his uniform, but like her, he kept firing. She glanced at him, and he met her gaze. He wasn't so bad for an enforcer. Better than Galba. He gave her a smile, a quick, weak thing, but comforting nonetheless. She tried to muster her own, but it didn't come. The ore processing chamber echoed with the sounds of battle, the sounds of dying. She heard a roar and saw a red-armoured warrior hurl one of her miners against an outcropping of machinery. The traitor space marine turned as a fusillade of bolt-gun fire struck him, driving him back against the wall. He staggered forward a few uncertain steps before slumping and toppling over. The sight gave her some hope. If monsters like that could die, then maybe they could win. Maybe.
Reloading!
Desh said, dropping down behind the bank of industrial cogitators they were using as cover. Reyes fired over the top of the bank, covering him as he reloaded his combat shotgun. Around her, miners and enforcers moved up through the chamber, but slowly, hesitantly. They could all feel it. Something was coming. She felt it on her skin, like the hint of rain. Her autogun clicked, and she dropped to her haunches.
Reloading!
She said, ejecting the ammunition drum. She reached for another as Desh took her place in the firing line. She fumbled at her gear belt, her fingers tracing across her plasma cutter before she found what she was looking for. The drum was covered in passages from the Lectitio Divinitatis. Yet it seemed only fitting, given the enemy. Old Father Zebus had done it for all of them, every miner, even a few of the enforcers. The missionary was too old to fight. Had been too old to fight for a decade or more, but he knew his scripture. As she clicked the new drum in place, she peered around the cogitator bank. The chamber had been desecrated. That was the only word for it. Bodies were stacked in the corners, and blood slathered everything. The walls and floor stank like nothing she'd ever smelled before. And something else. There was a sound, faint, under the roar of gunfire and the screaming. But it was persistent, like metal, scraping on stone. Or laughter. It was getting louder, no matter how much she tried to pretend otherwise. Something was coming. At the centre of the chamber, the air had taken on a watery tinge. One of the traitors stood there, his hands raised, his voice echoing hoarsely over the sounds of battle. Nearby, one of the Raven Guard hung from a web of chains. The Space Marine, Spyros, was dead. Reyes hoped he was, at least. His chest had been torn open, the black carapace hanging in bloody tatters, and the thickened ribcage split. The traitor space marine had plucked something from his chest and was holding it aloft, as if it were an offering. Beyond him, she could see Karos and several other Raven Guard fighting their way towards the centre of the chamber. The air convulsed. She felt her stomach twist. Desh cursed.
"Did you feel that?"
"It's happening," she said. She didn't know what it was. She didn't understand, but she knew it had to be stopped. Before Desh could argue, she darted into the open, ducking past combatants. Lazrounds plucked at the floor around her feet. She could hear Desh cursing as he hurried after her. The air had turned thick. She could feel things moving through it, just out of sight. Something giggled in her ear. One of the traitors lurched into view, roaring. She ducked past the giant, not stopping. She raised her autogun, taking aim at the chanting legionary. She knew her autogun wouldn't hurt him, but she had to try. Immaterial claws scratched at her, and the giggling became urgent whispers. She saw him lift something glistening and wet, and a light grew, shining, spiraling, an ugly light, too bright, and the whispering became a roar. She fired. There was a sound like a bell, tolling in the deep. For a moment, the air turned to fire, and she couldn't breathe. She heard screaming, not human, but something else. She saw the traitor staggering, smoke rising from him, as if he'd clutched a grenade to himself and it had gone off. He turned, and for an instant, their eyes met. She froze. There was so much hatred there. Raw, animal hate, not just for her, but for who she was and all she represented. She raised her gun again, but before she could fire, she heard the wet scrape of meat on stone. The world stuttered to a halt. A stink like fresh spilled offal washed over her. She turned, slow, too slow. A mountain of muscle and metal rose over her, its face impossibly beautiful. She saw a massive blade sweep back and knew it would split her skull, and there was nothing she could do about it. Nothing at all. Karos shoved her aside, dislocating her shoulder with the force of his blow. She cried out as she hit the ground and lost her grip on her weapon. She saw the monster's blade fall, and Karos's hand spun away in a spiral of red. The Raven Guard made no sound as he shoved his bolt pistol into the thing's chest and pulled the trigger until the weapon was dry. The monster roared and smashed Karos to the ground. It whipped its blade up, ready to strike the prone space marine. But a combat shotgun roared, and the monster whirled with a shriek. She saw Desh stumble back. The enforcer fired again and again, pumping shot after shot into the advancing creature. It reached for him, and he flung himself back. As it made to lunge after him, Karos leapt onto its back, his wounded limb wrapped around its throat. It dropped its blade and clawed at him, tearing great, sparking gouges in his armour. Reyes smelled the acrid stink of transhuman blood and winced as Karos was slammed into the floor hard enough to split the ferrocrete. She was on her feet by then, arm numb, but she had her plasma cutter. The tool spat and flamed as she thumbed the activation rune. The monster turned, and she saw that Karos had managed to ram his combat blade into its throat. It wheezed, ichor bubbling from the wound. It bent, reaching for its blade. "No!" she said. The plasma cutter hissed, and the monster screeched as the solid spike of heat burnt through its talon. It swept its good hand at her, and she lurched under the blow, stabbing at it with the cutter. She smelled something like burning oil, and the creature staggered, wailing. Off balance, she hit the ground, jarring her arm. Cursing, she lashed out wildly, scraping the cutter across the beast's legs. It howled and fell. She scrambled back as it flailed at her. It lunged again, and she thrust the plasma cutter into its face. Its momentum carried it into her, and she screamed as it jostled her arm. It twitched, gurgled, lay still. The smell of its dying enveloped her, nearly causing her to pass out. She heard shouting, and then the weight was being levered off her. She saw one of the other Raven Guard, Derren, she thought, rolling the corpse away.
"Do you live, O Lord Reyes?"
She coughed and nodded. Desh was there a moment later, helping her to sit up.
"You killed it," he said.
He didn't sound shocked, so much as thankful.
Somebody had to...
She clutched her arm and cried out, as Desh helped her to her feet.
Where's Karos?
Darren stepped aside, and she saw the leader of the Raven Guard laying in a heap. One of the other Space Marines, she thought his name was Chain, was crouched beside him, speaking softly. Chain looked at Darren and shook his head. Reyes fell to her knees beside Karos. They had removed his helm, exposing battered, swollen features. His chest plate had become a concave mess, and she could hear the rasp of his lungs. Blood spilled from the cracks in his armour. One of his eyes had burst, and the remaining one fixed on her. His limbs jerked limply, and she realised that his spine had been broken. His lips twitched, as if he wanted to speak, but he said nothing. No final words, no goodbye, no explanation. His eye dulled, and his breath rattled. A moment later, he was still. Darren dropped to his haunches beside her.
His ribs shattered. Both hearts were pierced. His spine was broken and there was swelling in his skull.
He spoke calmly, as if Karos had been a stranger. Maybe that was just how they talked about each other.
He saved me.
Darren nodded and rose.
Their leader fled. We will find him.
Reyes struggled to her feet.
I'm coming with you.
Desh was at her side a moment later, steadying her. She caught his hand and squeezed it. Desh returned the gesture. He wasn't so bad, for an enforcer. Darren didn't argue with her.
Give her your people. It is time we finish this hunt.
Elmace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Calder had once heard Dawn describe a siege as 1,000 moments of unseen heroism. Patched into the Pictofeed that the Raven Guard had given him access to, he witnessed them all, if only out of the corner of his eye. He saw the Crime Lord Stella Drum balance a las carbine atop a shattered windowsill and fire at the demon worshippers, howling in the streets below. She spat orders at her followers, and one of them hefted a missile launcher. There was a red flash, and the street shook from the resulting explosion. Elsewhere, he saw enforcer rumblers skidding through the shattered streets, sirens blaring. They took a sharp turn, swinging around a corner. The assault cannons mounted on their chassis stuttered, and a mass of bodies was reduced to red ruin. The rumblers sped on, rolling easily over the broken corpses. Somewhere to the east, in an alleyway, red uniformed soldiers hurriedly hauled a las cannon into position as a tracked troop carrier rumbled past, unawares.